earlier court papers, Smith has argued that an attempt to, quote, use fraudulent means to thwart the transfer of power, close quote, should not be considered an official act. And in weather today in Washington, D.C., it is currently 64 degrees under mostly sunny skies. For WPFW News in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Good afternoon, this is the Shai Rana Show with your host Zain Al-Amin. This is a show that focuses on Arab culture and politics, and it airs every Wednesday for 1 hour at WPFWFM.org and WBAI-FM. Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to the belly of the beast, to Washington, D.C., the swamp that has mired us all in the reactionary politics of local politicians and an administration that resides here that is senile, murderous, and zombie-like in its approach to foreign policy. I wanted to mention a few things in terms of news. Today marks the day, marks 4 years since George Floyd's public lynching. And according to what the activists say, that the response has been the same ever since the Black Lives Matter marches had stopped. Basically, our own mayor and the mayor of New York, all of these black mayors that are basically responded to Black Lives Matter by establishing more policing, adding to the police force, adding to the budget, adding to state violence, and doing what like the mayor of New York is doing, having the National Guard basically disrupt our commutes with searches. And also putting things like robot police that are roaming the corridors of the metro system in New York, which is laughable. Of course, they couldn't do anything against the floods that were happening. When they happened, they were used as flotation devices. Also, today marks 21 years since the U.S. invaded Iraq. It was on this date, on March 20th. And I would encourage everybody to look at the costs of war, which quantifies the death toll and the cost internationally and domestically to that. And where have we arrived? It's just like Afghanistan. We spent 20 years to replace the Taliban with the Taliban. And again, the military-industrial complex is happy about that, because what's important is the expended bullet, not the baloney that the administrations are giving us about seeking democracy and freedom and such. The numbers are in the millions, of course, from the Iraq war, and right now we have an Iraqi resistance that's actually resisting the Israeli occupation from a distance, and also resisting American presence. I hope that one day my children or my grandchildren will see no jackboot, no American, not a single jackboot on our soil in the Arab world. We're tired of this massacring of our people, and it's ongoing today in Gaza. We're tired of the wars that are for America's resources, so that they can suck out the oil and the minerals, and their maritime routes, etc. We're tired of that, and that's why what Yemen is doing is pretty incredible, and what the Lebanese resistance is doing is amazing what the Iraqi resistance is doing is for the benefit of all of us in the long run, domestically and internationally, because the amount of money that's being pumped in at a time when we're facing basically extinction through climate change is pretty much is being dropped into that black hole called the military industrial complex. So those are two moments that we need to mark in history today. The last thing I wanted to tell you, just some updates. First of all, we're seeing more countries like Canada call for an embargo on arms sales to Israel finally. Trudeau woke up probably because he's being disrupted at every dinner, disrupted at every speech, just like Biden and Blinken. And the whole Monsters, Inc. is being disrupted at every turn here in the United States. God bless the activists, Jewish, Christian, atheist, Muslim, agnostic, all of the religions. There's a beautiful multiracial bouquet that is resisting the state of affairs, that is still resisting the Arab Holocaust that's happening now. And yeah, it is a Holocaust. You know, don't scrunch your eyes at me when I say Holocaust. It is a Holocaust. And if you don't believe it's a Holocaust, then check your Islamophobia, check your racism, because you don't believe that we are fully human. The baloney that Schumer is spreading, everybody's praising him because he said Netanyahu must resign. He woke up after 5 months of slaughter, and to say that Netanyahu is a problem and that he has a bunch of racists with him, flanking him, that are running the ethnic cleansing policy. And, they're trying to make us believe that all these problems, like the fact that armed settlers are going through pillaging, raping, and killing throughout the West Bank, and the massacres that are happening daily, especially around people trying to get food for their families in Gaza, being massacred by the IDF. The fact that Al-Shifa hospital staff has been removed, leaving the patients there without any assistance, without any kind of medical help, leaving them to die as they left those infants in the incubators to wither away. That all of this, and the fact that the IDF and the settlers and the Israelis in general, the vast majority who remain there, are posting their war crimes right there and bragging about it. He's trying to tell us that all of that is actually will be solved, but if Netanyahu is removed, no. That will be solved when Israel is ended, right? This is a fake country that has shred the social fabric of every country around it, that has destabilized the region, and is of no longer of use even to colonial powers. The only reason it's of use is to our representatives, who are all of them, almost to the with the exception maybe to a handful, are being bribed by AIPAC. And none of the liberal talking heads are talking about foreign interference now. Yeah, and when it was Russia, the talk was constant, but now not a single person that talked about Russian interference in our elections is talking about Israeli interference in our elections. And lastly, I wanted to ask everybody within listening range to show up today at the 9:30 club at 6 p.m. And the reason why is because there is a Zionist artist by the name of Matisio Yahoo, who is playing tonight at 7 p.m. And he is a racist of the. He sings fascist songs that glorify the genocide that's going on, and the 9:30 Club is hosting him. And so I need people are going to turn out at 6 p.m. and are going to stay from 6 p.m. throughout the concert. Come out and support us there at that demonstration. This same artist was just recently canceled in Chicago on the same day of the event because of the measure of the outcry, the magnitude of the outcry that rose up in opposition to giving such a racist platform, a platform. Having said that, let's move on to we have two short segments and one long segment to share with you. The first segment is a few minutes, and it's Naomi Klein talking about complicity in genocide, how this genocide is not the first one. So let's listen to Naomi Klein with a spot-on analysis of what's happening and about the unity among Western leaders in this atrocity.
In your country, as well as mine, there is no moral leadership except the leadership springing up from the grassroots. All that we have is one another. We should pause over this because it is part of the horror and vertigo of our historical moment. Israel's annihilatory campaign on Gaza and on Palestinians is not the first genocide in modern history, not the first time openly fascist forces have fused a violent supremacist ideology with seemingly limitless commitment to wipe out a people they consider a demographic threat. What is unique, at least since the era of open colonial genocides, is the unity this carnage has inspired among political elites in the global north, and to some extent beyond it. Donald Trump agrees with Joe Biden, Rishi Sunak with Keir Starmer, Emmanuel Macron with Marine Le Pen, Justin Trudeau with Giorgia Meloni, Viktor Orban with Narendra Modi. The message being sent is a simple one. That the gilded bubbles of relative safety and luxury that are dotted across our cruelly divided and fast warming world will be protected at all costs, up to and including with genocidal violence. In the many pillaged parts of our planet, this obscene message has been fully received. Gustavo Petro, the courageous president of Colombia, decoded its meaning immediately. Back in October, just a few days into Israel's onslaught, he stated, and this is a quote, "The barbarity of consumption based on the death of others leads us to an unprecedented rise of fascism and therefore to the death of democracy and freedom. It's barbarism, or global 1933. In Israel's attack and the support from governments of the North and right-wing forces in the South, he also saw a preview of a shared future, stating, and I quote again, what we see in Palestine will also be the suffering of the world, of all the peoples of the South.
Well, if you think that we act in support of Palestine because of elections this year, you don't know South African history. You don't know the history of liberation and struggle. We didn't meet the Palestinian people on October 8. We've been together in struggle for many, many decades. The people of Palestine trained the freedom fighters of the liberation movement. It's not... This is a relationship of freedom fighters, of activists, of nations that share a history of struggle for justice and freedom. We didn't meet Palestinian people yesterday. This country's leaders, in the course of struggle, led by our then president, Oliver Tambo, did something no leaders have done before. Oliver Tambo went throughout the world because at the time we had nothing. All we had was our desire for freedom. He went from country to country worldwide and said, join us in solidarity. Even if you give us a pin to hold up our trousers and our skirts, do something with us in international solidarity. The concept international solidarity was coined through the work of Oliver Tambo as a facet of struggle, as one of the rungs, one of the principles of struggle, that wherever oppression might occur, whichever corner you live in, if you can act in the...
I just wanted to introduce this next segment in case you're wondering who is speaking now. It's the South African Foreign Minister, Naledi Pandor. And she just delivered a short speech in an iftar in South Africa, an incredible speech. And we'll continue listening to Naledi now.
This principle is one on which we have fought our struggle as the African National Congress. This principle is why we support the people of Cuba, as we believe no people should be denied rights. No people should be sanctioned for no reason. No people should suffer because of their ideology. They pose you no threat. They can do you no harm, but you deny them access to goods. This cannot be tolerated. And when we see that injustice, as South Africans committed to justice, to human dignity, to equality, all values you prize because they're in your constitution. Values that are not just for you, values that apply to all humanity. As a Muslim, this is what I believe, and I'm glad the African National Congress shares those values. So It is not a matter of yesterday. It is not a matter of the election tomorrow. It's an issue of justice. It's an issue of fighting colonialism. It's an issue of fighting racism. It's an issue of fighting occupation. It's an issue of upholding the Charter of the United Nations, which says every nation deserves their sovereign integrity. The people of Palestine deserve their sovereign right to their land. Then on the humanitarian aid, I think what you have seen in Palestine, my dear sister, is that there is an attack on all those who provide humanitarian aid. The allegations against the workers of UNRWA, which are allegations that have been made for many years, and where we've not seen a single shred of evidence being provided. This is all an attempt to ensure that the people of Palestine are denied basic goods and services. So what we should advise is that the persons you refer to should approach the remaining UN officers for assistance. We are also working with non-governmental organizations in Palestine, in Gaza, in the West Bank. And so we should approach those organizations that are human rights organizations that will be able to direct people to where there is assistance. But what we all have to fight for here, and I've asked this everywhere I've spoken, if you have a few hours, could you take your time and just make a poster? The poster should read, Stop Genocide. And go and stand outside 5 embassies. There are 5 primary supporters of Israel. I'm not going to name them for you. You must do your work. as the women in black did for us when we were fighting apartheid. Stand up and petition. Stand up and protest. Stand up and be visible. Don't only come to this dinner. Be visible in support of the people of Palestine. Be visible. Sign a petition. In Cape Town, I said they want to destroy UNRWA. Let's make sure we provide funding for it. I said this at the mosque, and alhamdulillah, our people have come forward. We've got money. We will send it to the comrades. So let us not just be visible in a protest march or in a meeting. Let's just take 10 of us, not many, and we say, today on Monday, for 2 hours, you'll be at this embassy, you'll be at that one, you'll be every day. It pinches that visibility. But our silence allows injustice. So let us stand up. Indeed, you are right, Maulana. We are dealing with the geopolitics of today. There's a fierce fight going on because unipolarity and hegemony has been allowed to go on for too long. And now with BRICS, with China emerging, unipolarity stands challenged. And the fight against multipolarity is going to be fierce. So we need to support organizations that support multilateralism and a world where different ideas can thrive and live side by side. But we are fighting a big geopolitical war. And this is the moment where the South can take its place properly in the global geopolitics. Then I've already issued a statement alerting those who are South African and who are fighting alongside or in the Israeli Defense Force. We are ready. When you come home, we're going to arrest you. I don't want us to be assigning trivial matters to the government. I believe there are roles the government should play. We must carry on a very good case at the ICJ. But you must be activists. You must also play a role. You must say thank you, Al. Goodbye. And don't book on them, whatever. Just make it clear how you feel. Really, they're stopping their flights because they don't have passengers from here. And they're pretending it's something big. I'm going to ask you, because here in Erasmia and Laudium, I know many of you are significant business people. I want to ask you, join your country in building your country's economy. Lots of you are investing all over the world, but you're not investing capital in your country, and we need it desperately. We need to create jobs. We need to help young people to understand that they shouldn't just look for jobs. They must start enterprises. And what better teacher than our community, who are among the best business people in South Africa? Let's contribute to building our country. Today is the last time I want to say this. I fully support President Ramaphosa. I'm so glad we've got a president who's determined to fight corruption, and I will stand with him. I will stand with him. I have no interest in being a president. I think it's the worst job in the world. I, as I've said before, I love serving the people. I'm a public servant, and I'm happy to remain as a public servant. On Hamas, let me explain. It's this complication. Firstly, the policy of the ANC and government has always been that we support a two-state solution, that Israel and Palestine should be two nation states living side by side in peace and security. In the final analysis, however, what eventually obtains will be determined by the people of Palestine, right? Very, very important that we recognize that. Just as we determine the course of our own history, we must allow Palestinian people to do the same. But it's also important that I say to you, in terms of our foreign policy promotes peace and negotiation. And I cannot criticize Israel for killing women and children brutally and then say I praise Hamas for holding innocent Israelis hostage. We can't do that. You can do it. You are an activist on the ground. I'm a member of a government, remember. I, as the government member, cannot be saying that. Don't expect me to say what you say. Don't. We are different. I represent all of South Africa. You can represent a small grouping or a large grouping, but I have a responsibility to ensure that I reflect the full policy of our country. And I do think that I worry, I've said this to my friends, that I am concerned that the Palestinian people have been left in the most terrible position to be exposed to such danger and harm. But I know that the Palestinian people have suffered for so long that they are prepared to resist until the end. And that is important. So we will stand with the Palestinian people. We will be guided by the Palestinian people. But I cannot, as a South African, say I go with Fatah, or I go with Hamas, or I go with faction group C of PLO. I cannot. What I am concerned about is, as part of the government of South Africa, I should continue wherever I am to support this important struggle for the just freedom and rights of the people of Palestine. And I'll do that wherever I am. Finally, I've answered the question about elections. I want to assure you, the gentleman who posed this very important question, you asked a very, very important question. But I want to really say to you, I think we should appreciate who and what South Africa is. Why in 1995 would Nelson Mandela say our freedom is incomplete without the freedom of the Palestinian people? And it wasn't an election. It's the position of the African National Congress. It was then, it is today. And I think I pause there.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Minister. Let's go to you.
Do you want to watch more videos like this one? If yes, subscribe to our channel and press the bell icon next to it. We have decided to bring videos on something nobody talks about: African politics, economy, and increasing power. Thanks for watching. And until the next video, stay tuned.
Tell us what you think in the comment section. Like and share the video, and subscribe so that you don't miss any of our African videos. It's the best way to support us.
Today, we're welcoming back to the show Huda Amouri, who's a co-founder of Palestine Action. Welcome back to the show, Huda.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, and thank you for all the work you've been doing.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. We're glad you could. Palestine Action was founded, as I think most of our viewers and listeners will know, nearly four years ago now, in 2000, the summer of 2000, by activists who wanted to go beyond marches and speeches and try and actually stop the Israeli war machine in its tracks physically. And their main target has been Elbit, Israel's largest private arms manufacturer. I think Elbit had 10 factories and offices in the UK, but now only has 8. Is that right, Huda?
Yeah, so they had to shut down their Oldham site.
Yes, I want to introduce this segment. Also, this is from the Electronic Intifada. And basically, this segment deals with Elbit Systems, which is in Britain, which is a part of the military industrial complex there. It manufactures weaponry for this genocide that's ongoing. They've been manufacturing weapons for decades for the state of Israel. And this is very instructive. This activist that is working on shutting down these Elbit system factories is operating in the United Kingdom, and they've been successful in shutting two factories so far, or two offices. And it's also instructive to see how they're actually using the city council. As you know, we had activists interrupt our own city council in DC to confront the mayor and the council members about their support for genocide, which they deny that they're involved in international politics. But as you'll see, in order to shut down the kind of factories of fear and horror, these weapons factories which exist all over the DMV area, and specifically in Rockville, that we can we use the local city council as a vehicle to shut it down, because they have the power to put pressure. So let's have a listen to the Electronic Intifada talking about the shutting down of Elbit Systems weapons manufacturers.
Have got another site now in Bristol, which they've been building for the past few years.
So the Bristol site is sort of the head office now in the UK. Is that right?
Yeah. So they have a headquarters in Bristol, Aztec West 600, and they also have a manufacturing research site, which they've recently launched with the help of the Israeli embassy. But actually, interestingly, the Aztec West site in Bristol is owned by Somerset Council. So this is the only Elbit site which is actually owned by a local government, and there has been a concerted campaign against that council to evict Elbit.
And Huda, you recently wrote about how you, and just in the last few months, you and your comrades at Palestine Action have forced, I think, three companies, or is it four companies, to break their ties with Elbit Systems, which is, of course, the largest Israeli weapons manufacturer? What are those companies, and how did you force them to break their connections with Elbit?
Yeah, so the first one that cut ties was IO Associates, and they were the sole recruiters for Elbit Systems. They did all of their recruitment services for them, and they cut ties with Elbit after a two-month campaign which involved activists storming into their offices. Actually, activists stormed into their brand new Manchester offices on the day they opened it, and they were kicked out of those offices after actions against them after about a month. And you know, we had red paint sprayed over their different offices across the country, and it took 2 months for them to announce to us that they are cutting the contract with Elbit Systems. And we actually had someone inside IO Associates who left the company because of their work with Elbit Systems confirm that Elbit Systems was their biggest client. So that was quite significant for them to do so. After that, it was Fisher German. So that's been a two-year campaign, and Fisher German managed the property of Elbit's factory in Shenstone. And there has been several, you know, dozens of actions against them over the past 2 years. And then they announced to us that they are cutting all ties with Elbit Systems. And then after that, we had the website designers. The website designers of Elbit's Leicester factory. It took one action. Someone spray painted drop UAV on their offices, and they wrote to us immediately saying that they are no longer hosting the website for Elbit's Leicester factory and will not work with the company in the future. And then the last, but perhaps most significant, was Crane and Nagel. They are one of the world's largest shipping companies, a multi-billion pound multinational company. And they are one of only six companies who are actually licensed for the secure collection and transport of weapons and firearms. And they also wrote to us to confirm that they are cut the contract of Elbit and to ask us to cease the campaign against them. And I think these string of victories signifies the growth of our campaign, as well as the strategy to also expand to their whole supply chain. Elbit can't operate if they don't have landlords to house them, if they don't have suppliers, they don't have recruiters. And even if they start looking for other, you know, other services by other companies, they will start reducing that. The pool that they can choose from will be reduced. They'll get lower value. It's a massive distraction for them, a massive headache. And ultimately, it's mounting the pressure on Elbit Systems and their viability to continue operating.
And clearly it's working. That's really impressive. And we've spoken about in live streams in the last few weeks that at least two major Japanese companies have also cut ties with Elbit Systems. And this also followed protests and grassroots organizing in Japan. Do you talk about internationally, you know, not just Palestine Action, because we last time we had you on, you talked about Palestine Action expanding to the US and I think now to Belgium as well. Mm-hmm. And also these actions in Japan, which are not Palestine Action, but are also targeting Elbit Systems. Just give us a sense of the international picture in addition to these really incredible victories in the UK.
Yes, so we've seen the campaign against Elbit massively expand. There was an international day of action organized by Progressive International, and we saw people in Brazil taking action against Elbit over there. Like you said, also in Japan, across Europe, in America as well, in the US. And also we're seeing more actions, a lot of actions actually, in Australia with people taking action against Elbit, occupying rooftops of weapons companies. So the international campaign is really becoming extremely strong and more of a threat to Elbit Systems globally. You know, when we were targeting Elbit Systems, we try and focus at where we are in our context and what we can do from our country. But seeing how other places, other campaign groups, other movements, Palestine Action expands as well, is becoming a global campaign against Elbit Systems. We're threatening their interests everywhere. And ultimately, that is applying a much bigger threat towards Elbit Systems and ultimately the Israeli military. And Elbit's name is being tarnished through these actions left, right, and center across the world. And I think that's a key thing as well, is within the Palestine movement, we all need to know the names of the companies who are supplying the Israeli military, who are supplying these missiles, drones, munitions to massacre the Palestinian people, because a lot of them, especially Elbit, are operating right in front of us. And it's a tangible way for us to impact the Israeli military apparatus across the world.
Yeah, I mean, it really sounds like Palestine Action, and it sounds like you've sort of expanded your victory since the last time you came on the show. I want to play a clip of what you mentioned earlier about Somerset Council. These are the kinds of actions you've been doing. Palestine Action volunteers.
Aztec West for the last 3 years. Elbit Israel, we've seen the list. Elbit Israel is also on the list. It's not enough now to wash your hands and sell it. You should be terminating the lease and kicking Elbit out.
Over 26,000 Palestinians have been slaughtered, over 12,000 children killed, over 66,000 injured, and the majority of Gaza is displaced.
Thanks, Tamara. Maybe you can mute that now. So these are council sessions, right, where they're discussing the business of the local council.
Yeah, exactly. So all councils have public meetings and are open to the public. And Somerset Council, it came to light recently that they are selling off, they are planning to, I'm not sure if it's on the market yet, sell off the property of Elbit Systems headquarters at Aztec West 600. But we made it very clear that that is not adequate simply after 3 years of being complicit in the genocide and housing these war criminals. It is not good enough to simply say, well, we're going to sell it on and it won't be our problem and we won't be complicit. Actually, they now have a moral and legal responsibility to cut the lease of Elbit Systems and evict them before they sell on the property. And we know that there is a clause that says that if the tenant is doing anything immoral or illegal on the premises, then they shouldn't be in there in the first place. And I mean, what better case for an immoral and illegal company than Elbit Systems, whose CEO who said that they are crucial to the genocide, has boasted about their contracts with the Israeli military during this genocide, and is also on the board of Elbit Systems UK. And, you know, arguably by them doing this, they are making, and these are Somerset residents as well who are taking part in this campaign, who are, you know, really annoyed that they have been forced to be complicit in this genocide in such a direct way through these councillors. And, you know, one of the hypocritical statements that have come out from this council is that they voted for a ceasefire in Gaza. You vote for a ceasefire while you're literally harboring the murderers of the Palestinian people. And I think we have to cut through these, you know, false statements of a show of support and actually make them, you know, actions speak a lot louder than words. And it's time for Somerset Council to kick Elbit out.
Well, I think it's brilliant whenever people can bring the issue right down to the most local level. You know, I know that one of the comebacks that the government in the UK makes is to claim that, local councils have no business making resolutions about international issues. They should be focusing on local governance. And I think what this shows is that local councils are very directly involved, whether as property owners or whether they're supplying services to companies like Elbit System that are directly engaged in genocide. So I think that's brilliant. Asa, should we talk about another action that Palestine Action did? I'll just say as background here, a few years ago, I think it was in 2010, I visited Scotland and I was very honored to be hosted for a number of events in Scotland. And one of the things my host did is they took us to visit the estate of very lovely grounds and house of someone called Lord Arthur Balfour. And I thought when I saw that lovely country estate, I sort of making a declaration that this country estate now belongs to the Palestinian people. But you recently had some of your comrades had an action related to Balfour. Can we show that video, Tamara?
Yeah,
And that is, of course, a painting of Arthur Balfour, who, of course, made the infamous Balfour Declaration when he was the British Foreign Secretary. That was in 1917, in which he essentially gave the blessing of the British imperial government to the Zionist plan to colonize Palestine and steal it from its indigenous Palestinian people. What's happening here, Huda?
So this was an action against the Balfour painting, which is in Trinity College at University of Cambridge. And as you can see, they pretty much destroyed that painting. It's worth noting as well that Trinity College do invest in Elbit systems. But the main purpose of this action, I believe, was to highlight British complicity in the colonization of Palestine. And the fact that we are honoring figures like Balfour and, you know, having his paintings up at University of Cambridge, yet most people in this country were not aware of Balfour's role. And by default, not necessarily as aware about Britain's historic role and current role in the colonization of Palestine. So I think this action really brought out, you know, a whole debate and conversation around Balfour and around British complicity, which is good to see, because, you know, as Palestinians and obviously all of you will know about Balfour, will know about the Balfour Declaration. You know, we're raised up knowing the name of Balfour, but for British people, that's not necessarily the same. Yet he was a foreign minister in Britain when he signed away the lands of Palestine without having the right to do so. So I think this has changed that. And actually people do know the name of Balfour now and understand, you know, what he did in to sign away a land which he never had any right to do. And I also think that, you know, the reaction, you know, we have actions all of the time in Palestine Action, and this one just went absolutely crazy. And I think that actually shows that the fact that it went viral in itself does show shows what society's views are in many ways, that they are shocked, so shocked about a painting that they didn't know existed being destroyed or torn apart. But yet that same reaction isn't given for when a museum is destroyed or universities are destroyed or families are massacred in Palestine. And so I think it highlights the moral inconsistencies in our society. And what do we really prioritize, figures of Balfour or our role in genocide?
And also, I think it's, you know, many people will know that Balfour was the foreign secretary in 1917 when he issued, of course, the infamous Balfour Declaration. But people might not know that Balfour was also prime minister prior to that. In fact, it's a little bit of an echo of what we have now, where David Cameron, a former prime minister, is now the UK foreign secretary. And Balfour was a precedent for that. He became foreign secretary after being prime minister. And I believe that it was in 1905 that as prime minister, he pushed for the passage of the Aliens Act, which was not just a racist law, but specifically primarily intended at restricting Jewish immigration into the UK. And Balfour spoke up in the House of Commons in very derogatory terms about Jews in arguing for this law. So not only was Balfour an imperial racist, colonialist against Palestinians, against African people, against people in Asia, but he was very specifically and very avowedly an anti-Semite. So is it not amazing that in the UK, where there are witch hunts going on all the time and in the Labour Party over supposed anti-Semitism, which is often not anti-Semitism, it is... advocacy for Palestinian rights, that an august institution like Trinity College at the University of Cambridge would be honoring a Jew hater like Arthur Balfour.
Exactly right. And I think that, you know, doing actions like this where people can, when these points are coming through to the public, I think, you know, we are always, as you say, there's witch hunts about anti-Semitism and accusations of it, yet we don't look at our own historic figures who were so anti-Semitic that they wanted to colonize the Palestinian people in order to stop Jews from immigrating into Britain. And I think it's uncovered a lot more context to more people about the historic motivations behind the creation of the Zionist entity and the displacement of the Palestinian people. And also that, you know, Palestinians are not the ones to blame for the anti-Semitism. It's often come from European countries who have then imposed their own racism and creating another form of, you know, systematic ethnic cleansing of the Palestinian people as a result. And also that this is continuing to this day. The complicity hasn't ended. It didn't end with Balfour. It began with Balfour in many ways, and it's continued to this very day. So rather than, you know, a lot of people will be sympathetic towards the Palestinian, but as people in Britain and in many different countries as well, we have to play more of an active role in fighting for the liberation of the Palestinian people, because it's not some issue that we are not connected with. Balfour and the British, in many ways, were the architects of allowing this to happen to the Palestinian people. And as people in this country who are opposed to that, we need to play an active role in breaking down that complicity and support for the occupation of the Palestinian people.
Yeah, I think the process you described, whereby there was a lot of controversy, public controversy in Britain over this particular action against this portrait of Balfour, very much reminded me of the destruction of the Edward Colston statue, the slave owner who, you know, most people had not heard about before the statue was destroyed and dumped in the docks in Liverpool. It seems to me a very similar dynamic at play here, but maybe you could talk about, has there been any legal repercussions for the person who did this, and then maybe transition from that into talking about the recent moves to sort of smear you by the British government as extremist?
Yeah, so they haven't arrested the person who did the action, as far as I know. They did arrest someone else. They arrested someone who did an action against the Balfour statue in the House of Commons 2 years before and was found not guilty by a court. So it's clearly they did a lot of thinking there to try and arrest that person who wasn't even in the country during the time of the action. You know, great police work over there, but no one has been arrested as of yet who actually, you know, partaked in the action. But in terms of the, you know, the latest move, so we've seen Michael Gove, who is now trying to introduce a new definition of extremism, which they're going to announce tomorrow. And there's been a lot of leaked documents, and, you know, there's been a lot of articles mentioning that Palestine Action is supposedly going to be on this list of extremists in this country, which, you know, it's quite interesting to see how this government responds to the increased support for the Palestinian people.
What does it mean, extremist? Like, is this a like an actual prescription?
No. So apparently, according to Suella Braverman, we don't meet the bar for terrorism. So they're now trying to find a new category for extremism. But basically, as far as we understand, the most they can do is stop us from engaging with politicians and stop us from getting funding from councils and banners from speaking at universities. That is the kind of plans that they have for those who are labelled as extremists. They don't have the capacity to ban us. I mean, for us, that's not going to deter us. That's not going to stop us. And if anything, coming from a government who was so supportive and arguably is partaking in this genocide against the Palestinian people, for them to call us the extremists while they are so deeply complicit in the massacre of tens of thousands of Palestinians and the destruction of Gaza is laughable. And if we are seen as the opposite to them, then so be it. But in reality, most people in this country do not support genocide, do not consider those who are taking action to stop weapons manufacturers from partaking in genocide as the extremists, but instead those weapons manufacturers and the government are the extremists.
Well, it looks to me from what I've read about this is that, if a government that the UK thought was one of its adversaries engaged in this behavior of labeling civil society organizations, because of course it's likely not just to be Palestine Action, but perhaps a whole range of groups, including mainstream groups that support Palestinian rights or take other critical positions with respect to British policy and effectively American policy, because the government in London takes its orders from Washington, as we all know, that they label their opponents extremist, they ban them from speaking, and so on. It looks to me like the actions of a very authoritarian, anti-democratic regime in the UK.
Yeah, it also seems to be hugely Islamophobic. You know, Palestine Action is possibly going to be one. We'll find out tomorrow. But
for WPFW in Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Chris Bengert-Drowns with some brief news headlines. The Biden administration announced new rules today aimed at phasing out gas cars. The Environmental Protection Agency regulations do not go so far as to ban gas cars, but they do push automakers to ramp up sales of electric vehicles, with strict new rules on tailpipe emissions that will push the auto industry to accelerate its transition to all electric or hybrids by 2032. According to the EPA's analysis, the transportation sector accounts for 29% of total greenhouse gas emissions, which is more than any other sector in the U.S. GOP-led states and fossil fuel companies are likely to challenge the rule in court. A GOP-backed Texas law that would allow state law enforcement authorities to arrest people suspected of illegally crossing the U.S.-Mexico border was blocked again just hours after the U.S. Supreme Court cleared the way for it to go into effect. The Supreme Court did not rule on the merits of the law, but allowed Texas to enforce the measure pending an appeal. Late last night, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals put the law back on hold ahead of oral arguments before the court scheduled for today. The Biden administration has argued that Texas is overstepping the federal government's immigration authority and has challenged the law as unconstitutional. Civil rights groups have argued the law could lead to civil rights violations and racial profiling. A third former Mississippi sheriff's deputy was sentenced this morning for his role in a racist attack against two black men last year by a self-professed goon squad of cops. Cop Daniel Opdyke was sentenced to 17 and a half years in federal prison this morning, weeping in court before the sentence was read. Two other goon squad cops were sentenced yesterday, one to a 20-year sentence and the other also to 17 and a half years. One more is scheduled to be sentenced this afternoon, and the final two tomorrow. Last January, the group of cops assaulted the two black men with stun guns, a sex toy, and other objects. One cop shot one of the men in the mouth. The cops then planted drugs and a gun to bring false charges against the men. Those charges stood for months until the Associated Press ran stories linking the cops to other acts of violent racism, including two killings. The two survivors of the attack have filed a $400 million civil lawsuit against the Rankin County Sheriff's Office. President Joe Biden and former President Trump, both of whom had already clinched their party's respective presidential nominations, picked up more delegates yesterday in primary contests in Arizona, Florida, Illinois, Kansas, and Ohio. In another highly watched race in Ohio, Bernie Moreno won the GOP Senate primary and will face the Democratic incumbent Sherrod Brown in November. That race could determine which party takes control of the Senate in November. Trump had endorsed Moreno, and the primary was this year's first test of the former president's clout in a contested Senate race. In international news, European Union leaders are moving ahead with a plan to use Russian assets frozen in Europe to fund weapons and other aid to Ukraine. A group of EU